And we are live across the interwebs. Everybody, welcome back to an amazing episode of Event Icons. I'm just super stoked because our guest is just going to blow your minds. Probably one of the most vocal people I've seen on LinkedIn who's going to literally get you thinking differently about events. Our guest is just going to blow you completely away. We're also talking about something very, very important, which is the idea of an attendee journey and what is the experience going to be like all throughout the event and the journey that they're going to take. So you're not going to want to miss this week's Event Icons, so make sure you stick around and, you know, let's cue up that intro.
Hey, it's time for another episode of Hashtag Event Icons, presented by Endless Events, the show where you get to ask the icons of the events industry anything. Just follow us on social media to ask questions. Our iconic guests will answer them live during the entire show. Before we get started, the more people we have watching, the better the conversation. So please help share hashtag Event Icons on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Just tell your friends to watch live on any of our social media channels. Now, without any further delay, this is hashtag Event Icons.
Woo! Oh my gosh. Again, I'm stoked for this week's episode, you know, especially because we're going to talk about the arrival. So it's only fitting that I create an arrival experience for our amazing guest that we have today. Ariana Black is someone I actually saw on LinkedIn talking about some really cool stuff. And I was like, you know what, Ariana, we haven't met yet, but you have to come straight onto the podcast. So out of the blue, I was just like, yo, come be on the podcast. And she said, yes, I'm 100% in. And we were in the pre-lobby talking about some things. I was like, hey, save it for the recording. This is just good. This is good stuff. So you're going to get a lot of nuggets, a lot of awesome stuff, but I got to stop talking because this is about the guests. Let's welcome to the stage Ariana Black. Welcome, Ariana! So happy to have you here all the way from Hawaii.
Will, you have such great energy. People always say that, like, I move a lot when I talk, and when I watch replays of myself, I see my arms everywhere, but now I'm like, I'm in good company. I don't have to even worry about it. Definitely, he's bringing it too.
You know, it's funny too. People will be like, you know, you need to really calm down. You're moving around too much and things like that. And I'm just like, you know, it's just kind of like adds to the fun, you know?
I don't know. Honestly, like, I don't know how to be less excited. I just don't. And I don't know how to do things that I don't really, really care about. And I really care about this really wild space we're in right now. So yeah, I'm going to move around a lot.
All right. Well, before we go into the awesome space, I think everyone needs to know a little bit of your background, kind of what got you in the events industry and what got you to the point where, you know, now you're creating awesome conversations for women in product. And basically, you know, what got you to where you are today, living in Hawaii, producing awesome events?
What got me here? You know, I was thinking about this because I have done my homework. I've listened to a couple of podcasts, so I knew you were coming with this question. And I was thinking about it. And, you know, I've been essentially in events since university. I used to be a spin instructor.
Cool.
And I think group exercise is such an interesting microcosm of what an event can be and can look like. And so I would teach these spin classes that somehow became 90-minute spin classes, and then they were followed by a run. And so then I would start bringing in food because you have to feed people. Wow. And then I would start bringing in disco balls and fun lighting, create an experience. Wow. Yeah. And like really holding that space and like hosting these experiences, and developed like a fitness following in San Diego, wound up being in fitness for quite a few years. But I always really loved group fitness because I think that we learn in community, we work in community, and it's just more fun to do hard things together. Mm-hmm. And so that's like really where it started. I stayed in fitness, mostly group fitness, for a long time because also as an instructor, I did one-on-ones, but when you're working with a group of people, it's easier on the instructor too.
Yeah, 100%.
because group energy feeds and it creates a more interesting dynamic. And so I've always thought groups were really, really fascinating. Also, I'm a total introvert. So I like to be in the front of the class, weirdly enough, because then I control everything that's going on. I understand what's going to happen next. So you find a lot of introverts that really like to have a microphone on their head because it puts us in control. And I went from there to working in private events. I joined a small catering company just as they were scaling up and went into venue management as the primary caterer and event planner. I always joke, people say you're not married. I say, I got married 200 times in 6 years. Because honestly, I did. There were a lot of weddings.
That's amazing.
A lot of weddings, galas, but mostly private events. And and really working with clients to understand what sort of experience they wanted to create. And weddings are all about the experience. And from there, I moved into more tech-facing events. I was with the traveling Maker Faire circuit for a while. And if y'all don't know what Maker Faire is, I'm sorry you missed it.
Oh, my gosh, it's awesome.
It's awesome. And I was part of the HQ team that did the world at the World Fairground. So my responsibility was the shed within Maker Faire, which we used to call the show within the show. We were the retail. We had like more than 300 SKUs, but I also had stages, all this experiential stuff. You could come to learn to solder. You could watch a robot be on fire. So it was awesome. It was this like really vibrant mix of like commerce and education and sponsorship. And, you know, and I loved traveling with that crowd, which brought me into 3D printing and then later trade shows. And I spent so much time traveling after a while that I just wanted to take a break from conference rooms and hotel rooms and spend more time with my dog. So I wound up taking a role with Women of Product, which at the time I was Bay Area based. They're Bay Area based, but now we're pretty global. I mean, the team has grown like crazy in the last few years. And with Women in Product, I started out as a physical conference producer, and 2020 happened, and here we are. And, you know, in the journey of taking this really robust conference that meant a lot of different things to a lot of different groups, we're super lucky that, like, in 2019, our last year on site, we sold out tickets within 2 days. Hustling for sponsorship hasn't been an issue for us because we partner with companies that really, truly want to get access to the women in our community, and they provide a lot of value back. And, you know, and our speaker submissions, it's crazy. Every year we get up to 500 speaker submissions for about 75 spots.
Wow.
So it has been, to be a part of this really dynamic community, very community driven event has been really special. And when 2020 happened, I found myself in this position of like, how do I make this matter in the ways that it needs to matter for the people it needs to matter in an online space? Mm-hmm. And I was completely petrified, put my head down and like just freaked out for about 6 months and went to as many events online as I possibly could to try to understand what was missing and what we could create that would really be different. And in the process of that, I found that my own behavior online, that I was hesitant to reach out. I wasn't making the kind of connections that I wanted to make. So series of events, I wind up living in Hawaii, which really forces me. I mean, I don't know how many people work here, let alone how many people work in what we do, but it has really forced me to be way more vocal in places like LinkedIn, because if I want to meet new people, if I want to have the quality of conversations that I want to have, I need to start sparking those conversations. So I've become my own best digital attendee, which has been wild. But just realizing that I can model the behavior that I then want to foster in these spaces that I create. That was a really long answer to,
no, that's awesome,
to how we got here.
Well, I think that like the idea of putting yourself in your attendee's shoes is important for the larger topic that we want to talk about. It's like attendee journey, right? Like so many times do we just plan without really like thinking about like putting ourselves as the attendee. What does every experience look like, right? We've been to so many conferences like, oh, registration. Yeah, you go fill out the badge, blah, blah, blah. That's super good to go. But like in reality, like this, every single step of the event might be someone's first time attending something like this. And I think that we have to think like that and kind of like reset our minds. Like, you know, that's why I think I'm a big proponent of like attend as many events that you can, because then you can be the attendee and see what that's like. And it sparks that creativity in a lot of ways. And I'm assuming that you probably have that same like mentality and thought process. And that's why you decided like, hey, I got to be my best attendee.
Very much. Because what I noticed is that, so in 2019, we had an event app. We would release the event app about 2 weeks before. And within a week, you know, I'd have thousands of downloads. So a week before the event, I had about a third of the crowd really thinking about the event. They're thinking about the event. They're planning their agenda. They're checking out the expo to see who's going to be there. I have a week before, I already have your attention. For folks that were traveling to the event, they were booking plane tickets. They were securing hotel rooms. Even if you lived locally, you were going to figure out where's the venue, how far away is it, is there parking, or should I be taking a ride share? So the attention that people gave to an event before the event started was a completely different arc. It was much longer. There was a lot more. I felt like we had them sooner, We had them sooner on social. And so in 2020, I guess my expectation was that I could get people to start thinking about my event beforehand. I knew that we had built this really robust container that really involves a lot of choose your own adventure. And I knew we had to educate on that. But I found that most people are like me. We will kind of glance at the emails beforehand. If it looks like there's real complicated arrival directions, we'll sort of skim through them. But we figure I know how to internet. Therefore, I'm not really going to think about this too much. And I found that basically people don't arrive at my event and they don't think about arriving at my event until 10 minutes before the hour when Google Calendar tells Slack that you have somewhere to be. So then you go get another cup of coffee. 5 minutes before the hour, you get another alert. And I really have people for maybe 5 minutes at max before they show up. So setting that stage and getting those feelings of like, I'm about to be at this event and what am I going to wear and what am I going to bring? And that all went out the window. And I had this little tiny compressed period of time. And I was still expecting people would read my emails. And I've completely surrendered now to understanding that I need to plan my entire event differently based on this really compressed arrival period, that maybe you have 30 seconds. Maybe they click the link. You have 30 seconds for this person to arrive and they're going to need an orientation. They're going to need education as to where the agenda lives. So it became this very different curve of how to arrive. And I really realized that I needed to plan for reality and not how I wanted it to happen. It doesn't matter how many emails I send out beforehand with the agenda. I can build hype around the things that happen in the morning, mm-hmm. but I just can't ever count on having anyone on board my platform until the event has actually started.
Mm-hmm. So this might be a loaded question. I don't know if it's true or not, but like, I've always had this feeling that like the beginning of an event is beginning of a virtual event is probably the reason why like engagement can continue going positively or can tank, right? Do you think that the beginning, that first, let's say, 3 minutes of the event are the most important thing to driving engagement through the next hour, 2 hours, however long your virtual event is?
So in physical space and the way that like I think about the bulk of the event, you know, events have you have the opportunity for a wow moment in the beginning. You have the opportunity, you know, that's typically in the larger group. You have the opportunity for a peak individual experience at some point during the middle of the event. And then you have this moment at the end where you can send them off with how you want them to remember your event. But what I've found is that if I want that peak wow moment, that morning keynote, if I want this feeling of, wow, we are all here together, I can't program that into the actual beginning of my event. So that peak wow moment for us a lot of times is that morning keynote. What I've learned is I need to drive so much excitement before that morning keynote with pre-programming that I can actually onboard everyone to the platform, get them all in the right room and have them in that right headspace. So one of the things that we did last year that was really helpful for retention over time was we had live DJ sets opening the stage with an incredible DJ that opens our stages every year. So people want to get there for DJ Umami. We also did these networking tables in the morning that were really intentional. In physical space, we might have, you know, San Francisco meetup or Seattle meetup. And they were just very loosely hosted tables. But I've found that I have to give people the conversations that they want to have so badly that they'll start logging on at 8 a.m. so that by 9 a.m., when I want that wow moment, that keynote moment, that, wow, we're all here together and this really feels live, I've gotten past all the tech glitches. I've gotten everyone in there. We've gotten past all of the, like, all of the where am I, what do I do, you know, sort of orientation moments.
So then that point basically, yeah, they you're creating almost like a buffer to allow the, like, technology to, like, kind of, like, people settle on in with something. Okay. Man, there's like a million different ways I think I can take this. By the way, for everyone who's watching live right now, we do this live. So please ask questions. Ariana's definitely happy to answer them. But until you have questions for her, I got lots of questions. So what other, like, so when it comes to arriving on site, you talk about like one tip is have a DJ that they look forward to seeing you know, rocking the show, doing really well designed networking tables. So then that way they can get in and like settle on in and make that like the beginning part of it. Don't, not making it show they jump right into content. What other sort of tips have you seen when it comes to like that first arrival period that has been really, really successful? And maybe let's start back to like before the actual event day starts. So you talked a little bit about the pre emails and things that no one ever reads for some reason, right? Like how, what have you seen be successful in terms of lead up to the actual day of the event in terms of an arrival part of the journey?
So one of the things we found is that, and I don't know, I'm sure other producers are guilty of this too, but when I was no longer limited by physical space, I went a little crazy with the agenda. Our whole team did. We no longer are limited by how many tracks we can be thinking through. We produced a ton of opportunities for engaging with speakers and content. And in the beginning, I don't think we educated enough as to, if you are, you know, this persona, here's our suggested path on day one. So we were much more intentional this year in our emails, which did get better read rates because we also teased on social that, you know, hey, if you're coming from a startup and you're mid-career in product, we have an agenda path for you. Make sure you open your email. So we did really like, we really were intentional about helping drive people to the content that would be most helpful for them. And creating some personas, some attendee paths that, with suggested learning paths and suggested networking opportunities. Because the truth is that there's a lot going on at any one time. You know, there's the first year we had, I think we had four stages. We're down to three, and I'm even thinking about what that will look like in this next year. But really helping people navigate through this space. The other thing that I've found is that a lot of these platforms now open early. And they open early for planning your agenda, for dropping things in chat. And what I found in, I found this in 2019 and then really applied it from there, was that in 2019, we had this networking app. And I found that people will ask questions everywhere. So there is nowhere that I don't need to be.
Where's the bathroom? And they're like asking in the keynote to like Q&A to the like keynote speaker.
Exactly. So being really mindful of that and not ever wanting someone to ask a question and not feel that that space was held has really informed how I think about chat. And, you know, I'm able to do this because I come from this really robust community and we have a ton of volunteer support. So not everyone can do this. I always want to like preface it with like, this is my experience. This is my format because of my circumstances. But we have a really amazing community that wants to be a part of the event. So we have between 75 and 100 chat monitors who hold that space, because my feeling is that a chat feed without monitors that are clearly identified as to this is a person I can ask questions to, or a chat feed with a bunch of unanswered questions.
Yeah.
Feels like a YouTube chat feed gone wrong. Like that
at
is
at least
not
a YouTube chat feed, there's lots of messages coming in. But if it's like quietly sitting there, you're kind of like, oh, this is weird.
Right. And these are hallways. Like chat feed, this is our digital hallway. And you would never, ever, ever hold an event at the Hilton and just have no signage. And not only do you have signage, but then you have humans. Waving, human signs, greeting, giving directions, answering questions. And I think a lot of people didn't translate that to virtual space. So I can't tell you how many chat feeds I've been in where I will click out of the event because I'm like, clearly this is not well organized because chat is rogue. Everybody's lost. One confused person will confuse everyone else. Mm-hmm. So really like staffing those chats for me has been like mission critical to the entire thing. And the truth is that there's a lot of chats in some of these platforms.
That's true.
So we do have a chat feed that opens up before the event. And my whole team, plus our volunteers, we're very, very mindful of making sure that we address questions continuously. And that we're also constantly iterating with our FAQs. So if something is coming up in chat a few times, we definitely need to make a little video clip about that.
That's clever. That's really clever. I think like knowing that, like that's also a good way to scale businesses in general too. Like most people realize like if you get a question more than two times, you probably need to write down something more permanent than continue to answer it, by the way. Speaking of chat, by the way, real quick, I want to give a shout to Mark LeGrand, Gilbert Romero, and Jim Kelly who are hanging out watching us right now too. Thank you guys so much. So you guys know this is live. Thank you guys so much for joining. So my question was about the chat moderators in terms of that like experience that that's like. You said you have 170? Was that, did I hear that right?
No, between 75 and 100.
Okay, 75 and 100. I was like, whoa, my gosh. You know, that's a
large amount.
So it's do you guys assign them to each, like each person gets a session, or do you, like, how do you guys, in terms of like designing that team to manage it? Like, how do you guys pick and choose where people go?
So if you think about it in physical space, we used to have a volunteer coordinator who would, you know, assign certain people to certain hallways during certain hours. Certain people are assigned to be keynote ushers. Some people are breakout ushers. We really thought about it in that same way. And we have schedule assignments that are time-based that are also location-based. So you're either main stage chat. We have a whole lot more chat monitors in the stages than we do in those Q&A sessions. We also had people assigned to the app to help build questions there. So we break it down just like you would in physical space, by time and location. And we also run several trainings with these folks, and we provide copy paste documents essentially with all of the directional and all of the FAQs that we get that we're constantly updating. We also create a Slack channel to give all of these volunteers a place where they can be talking off platform. So that if we're experiencing an issue on main stage chat, we can very quickly get around it throughout the event in general and then feed that new information back in.
That's awesome. I love the, easy takeaways for everybody. First of all, is like build a channel of communication off of the platform. That so many people forgot about this, I feel like, over the last 2 years. It's like we used to all have radios and we had the ability to walk up and go find someone. But like when you're online, if you only have the platform, if something starts to go wrong, they're going to be asking for help from you in front of everybody. So like that private Slack channel is brilliant. I also love that you guys have designed it to the point where you have like a leader, someone that they can kind of go to talk to about this sort of stuff on here. And then the last thing I just absolutely love this is to go back to that fact document is like giving them templates, because like the last thing you want is them to have to repeat and rewrite everything in there. But if you say, hey, copy and paste this, it also allows you to match the tone, because you like we all know that there's a question that's going to get asked that everyone's going to ask, and you need to make sure you say it the right way. Otherwise, it's going to come off offensive or frustrating to someone else. I think that is brilliant to give a pre-written answer. And plus, it makes their lives so much easier. They're like, yeah, I didn't have to really ever ask questions. I had to copy, paste, and then basically add emojis every, you know, a little bit there. So I think that's brilliant.
Oh, I like to pre-provide emojis. I love emojis.
Yeah, pre-provide the emoji as well. Yeah,
pre-provide emojis. Sorry. But we, you know, one of the things about our group is that we also make these documents open and editable, because these women are product managers. I'm not a product manager. The digital conference essentially is my product, but I'm not a product manager. So I'm not always going to have the most clear answers, but having community-driven essentially authors of these answers is super helpful, you know, and we do of course stay on brand, but allowing them to really co-create this messaging has been for us really, really critical to like having this feel like our community too, because we don't want this to feel like the women in product produced event. It's like, this is the community who, I mean, our community's on stage. Our community is staffing the halls, you know, our community is moderating every session. So it really feels like a group effort.
Cool. All right, so moving on from like chat, what is your what are their like awesome tips you have? You just gotta keep going down the line. What are the awesome tips you have for like arrival experience and what it's like? So like making sure they can get the platform, they can start utilizing it early, having great chat. I've always believed that the chat is like one of the biggest keys when it comes to digital and hybrid events. What other stuff when it comes to the arrival experience that you think is special sauce for you guys?
I think for us it's been rehearse. I think that was a big miss in the early days when we all tried to figure out how to create a decent virtual event, was we assumed people knew how to Zoom. And I've assumed never assume. Like that's my key learning has been just don't assume, because often it is your highest level speakers, it is your VIPs that are going to be trying to come in on mobile, and you might be using a platform that's not optimized for mobile, or for some reason moderator permissions don't work when on mobile. So what we actually set up two complete dry runs, and then for everything that's going to be really conducted live. So all of the live Q&As, anything that doesn't have a pre-recorded backup, we also do one-on-ones where we'll just make sure they can click in. We'll just make sure they know where all the buttons are, so that you never have this moment that's happening in public space where your speaker or your moderator appears disoriented in any way. The other thing that we really have done, and this for me came from obsessing about virtual events and seeing so many fails, was that we do a lot of pre-recorded backup. We sometimes use them, we sometimes don't, but I always have a fully built broadcast stream in the can just in case. because you don't know. And I, of course, prefer to use my live opens, my live closes, but there have been times where a stream went down and we had to revert. So always having a backup plan has been, and you can do that in this space where you can't necessarily do that, you know, in physical space. The other thing that I really feel very, very strongly about is that in any live engagement, anytime you're not using a pre-recorded segment, I have at least two faces on stage, no matter what. I never have a single stage host. I never have a live session that has only one person that this session depends on opening for. Because if in the event that something goes wrong or somebody's a few minutes late or we have to restart a computer, like I always have someone there holding that space. So attendee, because if as an attendee, if I click in and there's nothing happening, even if it's 2 minutes after, I'm going to click out.
Yeah. Yeah, like, that's true.
Our everything is condensed, including our patients. Like in college, we'll sit in an empty lecture hall. We'll wait for the prof for up to 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to sit in an empty digital room for any length of time? No.
No, like, you're just not going to click your email like almost instantaneously. Yeah.
Right. And that is the thing, is that we have to really capture and hold space for people in this really incredibly mindful way, because we don't have those social constructs around, you know, if a speaker is late and everybody's assembled in a larger room, there's that level of, I don't want to be the one to get up and leave.
Yeah, yeah.
But here, everybody is one click away from a cat video. Like they truly are. So if we're not producing these experiences that are really relevant, that are really engaging, and that are really respectful of people's online timeframes, we're going to lose that.
Yeah, such a good point. So I want to give a shout out, by the way, Marjan joined us and said, have a backup for your backup for your backup. I kind of agree with you more. So when you say like a backup speaker, are you mean like, and they're on stage, like two people, are they literally both on stage sometimes, or you're saying that you have someone kind of like in the can, just like, hey, you're waiting here just in case this person doesn't show up, like you're almost like the understudy in some ways? Is it like that, or is it more like they're actually two people?
Actually two people. So I like, for a hosted segment, all like a hosted intro or outro, we actually have two people who co-host. And then for all of our, what we've also done is be really intentional about what we pre-produce that might be more information heavy and what we do only in live time and don't record. So for us, all of our Q&As, a lot of our networking sessions, some of our workshops are not pre-recorded. But in those instances, I always have a moderator who is usually equally like deeply in the field and a topic expert as well, and a speaker. So that, and you know, what's been cool about this is not only if the speaker has a glitch or if the moderator has a glitch, the other one can cover for them, but also the nature of conversations that are happening are now really held by two experts. And again, I have to preface that with like, I come from a community of experts who's happy to help participate. So not everybody has this, you know, luxury.
Well, it's such a good point. Like, I think that was something, you know, like I was the MC for PCMA's EduCon in Phoenix, and I was doing hybrid, and I realized that it helped a ton probably for me to be an MC because I knew the subject stuff they were talking about. So, you know, it's a good thing that I can probably ask deeper questions than maybe just a talented MC who doesn't have any industry experience. But also too, to your point, like we also had a second MC, and it was great because there was a couple times where we had to buy time, we had to kind of wait, and it was great because we could just create dialogue between each other. Like I've been there where I've MC'd or spoken, and then like things are running late, you're not quite sure what to do, and what ends up happening is I'm just being like, cool, yeah, so like what am I gonna do? And like, and then like I've had it where like I'm like, okay, do I have to break into a presentation that I have like in my like back of my mind that I can just start dropping facts, you know? Like it becomes very, very hard. But like when you have two people, like you're saying, it just becomes natural to be like, yeah, and so that was such a great talk, huh, Will? And be like, yeah, Will, it was so great, you know? And you can just continue going on down the line.
Well, because we're now having our sort of hallway conversation, only everyone is privy to it. I really, really think events are driven by conversations and conversations around content. So that's why I really love creating these opportunities that we don't record. And I get a lot of flack for that. But I'm like not a fan of, or I don't want to play things safe and then not follow my gut. So for me, I mean, there's a ton of negative feedback around the fact that I refuse to record everything. But if I record everything, why are you going to come? Yeah. I don't come. If they tell me before the webinar that it's going to be, first of all, webinar, but if they tell me before the event that it's going to be recorded, there's like a 60% chance I'm not showing up.
Yeah, good point. That it has to be experienced live for it to be good.
Because I'll get the recording, right? But will I watch it?
Hell no.
Will I engage in meaningful dialogue around it? No.
Definitely no.
No. And so for me, it's really important to have a lot of things that are not recorded, because especially if you're looking for conversation, you need live humans in the room to be asking these articulate questions, to be bringing their own issues to the table so the speaker can contextualize them. And if everything is recorded, I just feel like we need to create a little bit of FOMO. Like in physical space, you just can't go to all three breakouts. Everybody gets all mad that I won't record those, but you can't do it in physical space. Therefore, you make a choice. Therefore, you're more engaged in that room because you made a choice, you know, and you prioritized. And I'm like, well, product managers are all about prioritization. So let's prioritize, y'all.
Yeah, 100%. It says, unless I really have a few questions I want to ask, I can definitely relate. Yeah, definitely on there. I'm curious to know. So as a self-described introvert on here, which, by the way, like, no one would know with how you're dropping knowledge bombs right now that you're introverted. But when it comes to like the arrival experience for an introvert, how do we need to design the arrival for an attendee who might not be the first person? Like, so you talked about networking tables being like the first start to kind of warm them up. But, you know, for an introverted person, that might be like, oh, I don't really want to meet with people. I'd rather just sit in the chat of the live stream and listen to the hold music. What do you think are good ways to design the attendee's arrival for an event if they're introverted?
I think we have to be really mindful of making, not only holding the space with people who can supply answers to questions, but also making the information about how to engage and what to expect really, really clear. So I am the one out of 20 who will read, and I'll read all of the text and I'll read all the FAQs because I want to be prepared for what's happening, what I might potentially miss, where I might need to make a choice. So I think taking advantage of those text fields where we really can give a lot of good information. Like, we no longer have an event app and an event platform, but this event platform allows for some really great places that we can park information for people like myself who might want to self-serve. I have found that, and this is just a lot about digital behavior and my own behavior in general, but I won't just drop a question into a chat if I'm concerned that that question might be asked, might be answered elsewhere, and I can self-serve with this information. Because for me, chat is networking. I want to say something insightful in chat. I want to say something in chat that might help connect me to another person so I can have another interesting conversation. So I'm certainly not going to be asking if this is recorded in chat. I'm going to go find that information in the lobby. But I found that not everybody can see. For me, these are very physical spaces. Like, I think of chat as a very physical space. Like, I also wouldn't walk into a ballroom where registration was and scream like, where's the water station? So it's so interesting to me that people get in chat and immediately ask questions. But that's the nature of internet behavior, is that we're not as mindful about chat being a public space. For me, I'm like, I'm really here to meet people a lot of the time. I'm truly here to meet people. I may be consuming content, but I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me on LinkedIn after an event that I've attended or spoken at based on either something I said on stage, something I said in chat that they wanted to follow up with. So then I've made this new connection. So I'm really mindful about chat as this amazing opportunity to become a thought leader, to meet other interesting people. And so I think for those of us that are either more mindful about our internet behavior or also are just not wanting to look like idiots in chat, make that information as accessible as you can for us.
I like it. I definitely will say a big pet peeve of mine is when people ask questions, I'm like, you can get the answer somewhere else. And it's like, right. Like, one of my favorite tools ever was the let me Google this for you.
LMGTIFY. Oh yeah.
That's such a great website. If you haven't ever experienced it, Google, let me Google this for you and you can find that website and it'll change your life. Okay. So giving more information ahead of time, helps, I think, introverted people. So then that way they can feel like, also, like you said, I think a very important thing is like mentally prepared, because like I think this is the thing that we kind of forget about introverts. I think we did a whole episode of Event Icons about design events for introverts, but it's not necessarily that they don't like socially interact. It's not like they're like a vampire, like, no, thank you.
You just want to know what to expect.
Yeah, you know what to expect. It takes more energy for you to do it. So the more you can set your expectations the right way, the less energy draining it is for you to be kind of whiplashed around, you know, the expectations of the social interactions of the event in a lot of ways.
Well, and I also, for me, I picked a platform that really was conducive to multiple modes of behavior. I've been to other events where the breakout rooms, you had a choice of either clicking in and immediately being in a Zoom type room where you were on camera or video or not. Those were your choices, were either, okay, that's jump rough. Up on stage or don't, but you can't get your feet wet. You can't listen to the conversation and decide if you want to jump up on stage. Mm-hmm. So the platform that I chose for that reason was one that you can listen and watch and engage in chat, or you can jump up onto the video feed and be a part of the video conversation. Because for me also, like, I don't know about you, but like most of my friends, 2020, 21, and still now, a lot of my friends are moms. I have had mom friends send me a picture where they have a headset on, they're driving slides with one hand, their kid is in their arm slightly off camera on an iPad. I'm not even kidding. Like, wow. Just having respect for the fact that like we're all working in very different worlds now, that and that I didn't want people to not feel like they could engage in a way that felt good to them. Not everybody wants to jump up on camera. I am a really slow typer. So if I feel like I can contribute value to the conversation, I am definitely going to click request to join. I'm going to jump up there and because I want to share and I want to ask my questions. But that's not everybody's comfort level. So I really wanted ways for people to engage in chat and more passively consume the video content or to be a part of that video content.
Mm. Okay. That's like, I think that's like so smart to be able to like give people the choice. I mean, like that's probably one of the most amazing things about planning an event in, you know, 2022 and beyond is like we're creating these personalized experiences where people can choose, yeah, how they want to engage. And I definitely agree with you. Like when you think about an in-person event, you know, you have the choice of sitting in the back of the room, being kind of disconnected. You can, you know, be in the front of the room, really, really well connected. You can decide to ask a question, not ask a question. But like if you end up getting in this place where your only choice is passive or your only choice is fully active. And that's the thing I think when it comes to your point about Zoom is like, even if you have it turn your camera off before you join in, it's still like being like, boom, Will's a part of this grid view that's coming up on.
But now
here.
You're this person who doesn't have their camera on. And that says something too. Like that. And I didn't want to put people in that position. Like I wanted people to be able to really understand, okay, where can I contribute value? How do I feel good in this space? And how do I want to engage? So for everything that we do, we always have the option to just watch or to join in.
Interesting. What other parts of the attendee arrival experience are you obsessing about? Because that was like the reason why I also you wrote it specifically that you obsess about these things. So what stuff is like percolating in your brain that you aren't necessarily applying yet, maybe, but you're thinking about and maybe thinking about applying in your next event?
What I'm really, really doing a lot of thinking about is, you know, especially as we move, I'm not going to say the dirty H word, but as we move into this combination event program where some things happen on site and some things happen online or in a digital format, I'm really thinking about what needs to happen in synchronous time and what needs to happen on site and what doesn't. Because I've also been to a lot of events that felt like really well-produced TV shows where chat wasn't or attendee interaction wasn't its own thing. It wasn't these meaningful conversations or even fun conversations. It was just sort of like LinkedIn bombing. But it also wasn't, it's like, do I need to be watching this now with these people? Am I getting more value? Or is this something I want to consume on my own later? So I think that I really want to look very carefully at content and figure out which content and which parts of which content are really going to inspire these conversations around them that can then either happen around them in chat or afterwards in follow-up dynamic Q&A sessions. And what do we really need to bring back to the on-site experience at the scales that things are happening on-site? I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but like every conference out there everywhere right now is still selling tickets like on day two of the conference, and they're expanding their scholarship programs. And there's some pretty good evidence that like, maybe they're not selling out and getting the numbers that they want. And we all know it's incredibly hard to scale, like between 100 and 2000. Like, how do you pay for that? So really making sure that the things that are happening on site are more valuable on site. Because I can tell you that like looking at the way that we behaved in a keynote in 2019, you look out at my audience and a third of them are taking pictures of the keynote so that they can have the slide behind it. But if I can deliver those slides to you in a link right now in synchronous time next to your ability to consume this content, like, is that more valuable on site? you know, or are you more present? If you know, I have the slides in hand, you know, and how this relates to arrival is that I'm really thinking about these different experiences that we're going to start having. We're going to start having an experience of arriving on site. Maybe this is for a networking party. Maybe this is for, I mean, people like to eat and hug, right? That's what's missing from the online experience. So we got to create opportunities for people to eat, hug, and just and just feel good about whatever the reason is that we're gathering them. But that space needs to be hosted, needs to be held, as does this online or digital component of it. And I think a lot of people are forgetting to have a central host or a central container for the online experience. They're either just throwing a live stream on it and calling it a day, which, I mean, we did that in 2019. A live stream is not a hybrid event. Like, it needs to create, it needs to contain bonus content. It needs to contain these other experiences that the on-site attendees are not seeing. And then I'm also really thinking about what happens so much better in digital space that I don't want to give it up. You know, some of the feedback that I've heard around folks that have returned to on-site conferences is like, you know, I really didn't get enough time to have Q&A with the speaker because we're all used to being able to do that now. Mm-hmm. We've all had a front row seat now. So I'm used, I mean, that was one of the things that made me fall in love with virtual events in the first place was like, because I got up at 3 a.m. and I was on my spin bike on some event, I was able to ask my questions to like VP so-and-so of such and such. And like, I would not have had a front row ticket to that event, but I, because I showed up, because I clicked first, I got there. And I think that there is a space for the hungry now to co-engage with content and thought leaders in a way that there wasn't before. Like before, you truly had to like have access to the VIP party to meet the keynote speaker. Now I can give everyone access and the first 25 people to click in can get up on stage.
What's funny is that I want to go back to an earlier point you made about the synchronous, asynchronous content too. It's like the equivalent of like, this should have been an email, but for the events industry, right? Like we need to be thinking about like, could this have been an email or whatever that equivalent is for synchronous, asynchronous content to your point. And I also just wanted to give props. I love that idea of like, yeah, we have access to events virtually better than we'd ever had before. Like, you know, for example, there's so many times I love using concert and festivals as an example. But like, I've been watching a lot of live streams of concerts and festivals. For example, I watched Flume play at Coachella and I was like, this is amazing. I just couldn't go to Coachella. I think I had like a conflict, I had a meeting or something like that. I just couldn't go. Or I was probably tired also probably that weekend. But it was great because I got to watch and experience this and never have done that before. And I think that's the thing we always forget about because we just assume that because in-person's better for connecting people, that we all of a sudden ditch virtual altogether. But in reality, it's like, it's this kind of grayscale. It's like,
I gotta argue with that.
All right, let's go for it. Do it. Let's go.
I can tell you, like, I went to so many trade shows, right? I'd get back to my hotel room with like just pockets full of business cards. Maybe if it was a fancy trade show and it had an app, we would like shake our phones together and it would magically expand contacts that are then still stuck in that app.
Yeah.
You know, and if I'm really diligent, maybe I'm going to update my CRM and, you know, and then have this digital record that I just did all this extra work to digitize your business card to remember why I met you. But if you reach out to me on LinkedIn based on a comment that I made in chat and you say, hey, my organization is smaller than yours, but we're really struggling with these same issues around digital hallways, I'd love to meet with you. I now meet with you two weeks later in a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. Now I at mention you on somebody else's post around a scholarship for small organization. Like I am making better content.
Oh, yeah.
For online. Sure. And also there's already this digital record where it's like, okay, here's the conversations we already had. You know, here's this immediate sticky connectivity that like, I would have had to be real motivated to put you in my CRM back in 2018. And now I have this trail, you know, and a lot of these platforms too, will store your chat conversations, will store the meetings that you've had. So it's like you're one click away from continuing this conversation and you're continuing. I mean, how much meaning is it if we rub elbows at a cocktail party and you're like, oh, hey, I used to work in 3D printing. Oh, yeah, me too. Okay, exchange business cards. What's happening there?
Yeah. But, what are the chances that would even happen?
Right. But you're having to seek out connections. They're not as just magically happening for you because you're not in line at coffee. You actually have to click on this person who said something interesting to you and you have to send a DM and you have to say, hey, I'd love to have a follow-up with that. And I think we're creating stickier networking. You know, and I think especially like for if you've been in the circuit for a long time, like I used to go to trade shows and honestly just to see other people that I used to meet at trade shows. So like this is our once a year time that we see each other, right? And people say, oh, I really miss that. But how important was that connection to me? If I all year long never followed up with this person, and now we're going to like have like chicken wings at the closing party of SEMA, like I just feel like, yeah, you have to work a little harder for it here, but it also means more to you.
Definitely.
Like, you know, for anyone listening that wants to like hang out with me and like get obsessive about the attendee path, reach out to me on LinkedIn because I will have a call with you. I would love to. And I think that accessibility, I hear our speakers saying that all the time, like, hey, reach out to me on LinkedIn. Let's set up one-on-one. Like, I think the connections are more high quality here, even if they're not quite as easy.
Definitely. I'm with you, by the way. That's why I used air quotes. So yes, you basically said everything I've been talking about for sure. So I'm there. I actually believe, to your point, to summarize what you said, I think that relationships start best online, but then get further solidified in person. Like, you know, like you can take like you can definitely like, I mean, this is one reason why, like I grew up like in chat rooms online and like I learned web design from random strangers from across the world that I would never meet. And I would say I had really great relationships with those people and never met them ever in person. But then like what was crazy is that you meet those people in person then and it's like bonded. It's like the glue that brings it together. Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking about, I'm going to date myself, but I'm thinking about LiveJournal and like being part of blog communities where, you know, you would have these interactions for years, but then like I'm in Toronto, I reach out, I meet up with my girl who's in Toronto, our first meeting, it's like we've known each other for years.
100%.
So, and you know, I'm going to be hitting you up when I'm in Arizona.
Yeah.
So it's 100%. Like, I feel like there's a lot of dinners out there that are waiting for us all to be having. We're preceding these relationships right now.
I agree 100%. And I think that that's really, I think like to your point, like what's really cool is that like what's awesome is you're thinking so digitally first about this stuff, and it's showing that like your community, you guys are still growing and your events are still thriving because of this. And I think that, you know, it's awesome. Like your point about like why you moved to Hawaii to basically like kind of like be the one that you have to create these experiences for yourself in so many different ways. Like, I think that that just shows that like you almost like put limitations on yourself to create that creative experience. And that's one reason why I think you're thinking about this totally in a different way than other virtual event producers when it comes to events. So kudos to you, by the way.
Don't get me wrong. I think there's a huge place for returning to on-site events in a new way. I don't think we need to go back, but I think there's a huge, huge need for some conversations, some roundtables need to be had in person because they're longer than 50 minutes.
Totally.
What we know is the online attention span. Also, you can't do a 2-hour workshop. You know, you can, but you gotta be real clever about it. I do it, but you gotta involve like yoga breaks in the middle.
But I need like breaks every 15 minutes. Let's be honest.
Exactly. So I think things that require really intense focus among a group of people that last longer than an hour, I think it's really important to have those things on site, but only if they are so small that everyone involved is truly part of co-creating this experience. Mm. You know, because anytime you get, even in a Zoom room, you get more than 12 people in a Zoom room and not everybody's contributing.
That's true.
You know, so I think being really mindful of the scale also of what we choose to bring on site in a new way.
Okay, so I have a really deep question, thought process. It might be going now a little bit of a rabbit hole on this one. Do you think that, so we were talking a lot about the arrival experience to an event, and we think about this way, like build up all this hype and energy right at the beginning, but for us to really succeed in long virtual events, multi-days, all days, all those things like that, which people have been struggling to plan properly because we kind of see this like—
If you're struggling, come to me because we had incredible retention on day 3.
So there you go. Well, boom. So my question is to think about this is like, do you think you guys are successful because you think about the event in terms of multiple arrivals? It's like, hey, we're going to do a 1-hour session. We need to do another arrival. It's the next hour starting and like things like that. Is that how you guys kind of approach it?
Absolutely. We think of each day as really its own entity and then each brick within each day as its own entity because in physical space, there's much more pressure to arrive on time. People can see you. You're going to run out of parking. So probably everyone gets there at the same time. But I have to count on the fact that people may click in for the first time at any given point. So one of the things that was really helpful last year that I was a big miss for me in 2020 and 2021. I learned my lesson and did better. But, you know, all of these platforms work a little bit differently. All of our agendas are planned a little bit differently. And we used to have these explainer videos that we'd spend all this money producing, all this time producing. We'd send them out in emails. We'd put them out on social. We'd put them in the lobby. Nobody's watching them. So if you can give me 2 minutes of time to watch my explainer, I can give you a much better experience at the event. So one of the things that I realized is that I need to play that explainer on the main stage several times because people may be entering and exiting at any given point. I also played it as a part of these preview reels. One of the other things that we did this last year that was really interesting and really helpful is that all of our speakers recorded hype clips talking about what they would be talking about. Cool. And we circulated a lot of this on social. So we actually were, I mean, and again, I'm super blessed. I know not everyone has this experience, but 5 minutes before day one of a 2-day event, there were 700 people in line on my digital platform waiting for the doors to open.
That's awesome.
That's mind blowing to me that like, they're so excited because we did a good job of telling them why to be excited, that they are lined up and the keynote doesn't even start for another hour and 10 minutes, but we gave them enough reasons to be here beforehand. And we created enough education about what this is, you know, about this is a camera on experience in many ways. You can do this. So we set the stage for people to show up fully. And we also really tried to create a culture of like, block your calendar if you'd really like to get the most from this experience, because don't tell me that you didn't meet anyone if you were also in 6 other work meetings and on Slack and on Teams. Like, you know, give yourself this time to learn, to grow, to engage with content, to meet speakers, to meet other women, because we're all here right now. And I think that's the reason that I'm so like hypersensitive and grumpy about the like, is this recorded, being asked constantly, or where's the replay for this other thing? Is like, I'm like, why are you going to go watch that recording of this thing that happened yesterday? I'll give that to you next week. Hold your horses. But like, be here now and engage now with the people that are in the container and co-consume this content with them and have conversations around it. So I think a lot of it has been about encouraging people to set that time aside in a new way, because we're used to interneting like as a part of 6 other things that we think we're doing effectively all at once. Mm-hmm. And helping people understand that this is a real event and you're going to want to block your calendar. And then our community really supported that with some great tweets mid-event about, oh, I thought I was going to take these other 6 meetings. I just cleared my schedule because this is so good.
There you go. That's awesome. I think that's such like a really like, I literally could talk to you for like 3 hours about this stuff. So I have to start to wrap up, but I think that point is something every single person who's listening to this right now, whether you're telling your attendees to do this, but also playing it back and hearing what Ariana just said to yourself, because there's so many times that we don't ever fully allow an experience to happen. So you as an attendee of an event need to allow these experiences to happen. And I know everybody's like, but I have this deadline. There's so much stuff going on, guys. I'll tell you right now, in my 15 years of owning this company and being remote and having all crazy things, everything can wait. And the world will not burn down around you. And if you just move everything to one more week, it's still going to be there next week. And even if your deadline's coming up, probably you'll be fine. Let's be honest. So I think like we all need to hear that advice, I think, to ourselves.
Well, and there's the magic is like, you don't know who you're going to meet if you show up. I cannot even tell you how many amazingly interesting people I have met in this space because I've showed up. And so I think those of us that are really making meaningful connections need to continue to talk about them so that, you know, so to encourage other people to really go out there and find your people. Like it, for me, this feels like early days of internet all over again, you know, like forums and LiveJournal. And I was like finding my people in this new way. I feel like we're now doing that in this video format. And it's like, for me, it's exciting all over again.
100%. All right. Well, I need to ask you my 2 end of episode questions for you. Otherwise, I think we might be here forever on here, but we'll definitely have to do some follow-up conversations for sure. So first end of episode question, what are your like favorite resources? So like you seem like somebody who's also really on top of technology and, you know, trends and things like that. Where do you like, what are your favorite things in the world that you want to share with our audience?
Oh, my favorite things in the world. So I got to talk about Priya Parker because I am so, what's funny is I'm hardcore digital. I need to know about everything that integrates everything. I stay on top of every update on every platform because I'm so interested in what they're all doing.
You love the change log. Yeah, me too.
I do, but I also love a good like in paper book in my hands and an Audible backup. And Priya Parker, who wrote The Art of the Gathering, and she's all over main stages right now. She is really positing some interesting ideas about why we gather and how to facilitate that. And I think I'm on my third reading of The Art of Gathering because it is, you know, there's when you're looking for connections, there's connections everywhere. And sometimes some of the things she'll talk about in regards to a dinner party are then sparking ideas for me about a breakout session. So I love Priya Parker. I get a lot of information on LinkedIn. LinkedIn often sends me to another place, but I feel like we have to really choose very carefully where we put our attention. So I don't do any other social. I find that LinkedIn is having the kind of conversations that I want to be having. So I follow certain thought leaders. I'm really interested in what they have to say. Shout out Julius Solaris, who is so controversial, but man, I love him because he's got some really interesting ideas. And I think also just creating, for me, the other resources, I mean, I'm asking my grandmother. Like grandma, it goes to Facebook live stream church service with a Zoom follow-up Bible study. And I start to ask her questions about like, do you feel like you're engaging more or less in the Zoom Bible study as opposed to on-site? And like when you're in your own living room, and how are these conversations different for you? And where are you getting more? And at what point do you get bored? So I think we can apply a lot of these. I mean, you can study and you can do all this recon, but we can really find a lot of these patterns everywhere in our lives because we're all interacting in digital ways all the time. So digital behavior is everywhere. And just figuring out which pieces of that you can then puzzle into the solution for your event.
I love it. Oh my gosh. So much good stuff. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I gotta like, I can't wait to ask this question. What's your number one tip that you have for people planning events today? Like, I'm going to challenge you because I know you got lots of good stuff. Something that you haven't said already.
I think my number one is plan your own event. It's really easy to be inspired by what other people are doing, to be inspired by what you've done before, to be inspired by what you're seeing out there. And I think those are all really important. But at the end of the day, like in this year in particular, I'm going to really be remembering to plan my own event.
Plan an event for yourself.
No, plan the event for my community. But not to be thinking about what everyone else is doing or what we've done in the past, but really to re-envision in this moment, like, how do I serve the why of my community? Why are my attendees coming? Why are my sponsors coming? Why are my speakers coming? And how do I best serve that? Knowing what I know and knowing what I can create. And with this amazing team that I work with, I mean, I work with such a talented team that I can go to my broadcaster and be like, I'm kind of having this weird idea, you know, and I sound a lot less crazy than I sounded in 2020, but you know, to really not be afraid to create our own thing because we haven't seen the best of this yet. And if you're worried about what other people are doing, you're not focusing on the value that you need to, the unique value that your event brings to your audience.
That's amazing. Oh my gosh. So good. I thought for a second you were like, yeah, plan an event for yourself. And I was like, oh, well, this is interesting. And I was like, but yeah, like to your point, like, it's the idea of like forge your own path, like when you're creating this event, and like don't some ways like you got to put blinders on in a lot of ways. And you know, I think especially like in 2020 that was extremely common, like, oh my god, this person's using this platform, this person's doing this. But like now we really need to continue like pushing away and being like, what am I going to create that's going to be unique and special and everything like that in so many different ways.
Right. And like, why am I creating it? Like, I think just going back to that central why, I mean, that's another great book. Simon Sinek, Start With Why. But like going back to that why of why are people gathering in your container, like as opposed to any other container? And how do you build for that? And if you think someone, you know, it's like I used to go up for all these examples to prove to myself that something was possible, especially tech wise. Mm-hmm. And now I know that it's all possible. So if I want things to happen, if I just get the right smart people in the room and I wave my hands and describe this result that I want, they can help me drive there. So I've totally stopped worrying about what anyone else is doing tech-wise because I'm like, I know that even though I can't do this, I can find the people that can do this because this matters to my attendee or to my sponsor or to my speaker.
Totally. I love it. I love it. Ariana, this has been such an amazing conversation. Like, oh my gosh, like I think literally if I don't stop us, we're going to be here for forever. So like, this has been so awesome.
I know, between the two of us, I can talk about
this
all day.
It's so great. I love your focus on like creating these unique and actually engaging experiences. And I love that like you're finding unique ways to think about the way you're using a platform for engagement too. Because I think so many people are like, oh yeah, what's the special sauce going to be that's going to get me more engagement? You recognize that it's not just design. It's not just technology. It's like a hybrid of both and designing around that technology.
And it's the people inside of it. Like, events are about people. So like, I think we all just need to really keep the people central.
It's true. So true. Thank you so much for coming on Event Icons, Ariana. It's been such a pleasure, such a great conversation. We're going to have to definitely do a follow-up. Put a comments down below if you definitely agree we need to do a follow-up. We'd love to hear. But Ariana, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Will.
And thanks to everybody in the audience. Mersion, thank you so much for all the awesome questions and the backup jokes as well. Jay for joining us. Mark, Gilbert, let's see, a couple other people. Jim's in here as well. Thank you guys so much for coming and watching today. Been such a pleasure getting to answer your questions and get to join with you guys in the chat. But we got to get out of here. So make sure that if you want to catch more Event Icons, you subscribe to event-icons.com. But in the meantime, we're going to get out of here and we got to go plan some awesome digital events of our own. So, all right, let's get out of here. And let me get the outro ready if I can figure out how to use my life skills. All right, see you guys later.
Thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of Hashtag Event Icons. To catch all of the bonus content, resources mentioned, and an invite to our Facebook and LinkedIn groups, head to www.event-icons.com. Also, let us know what you thought about this week's episode, share your biggest takeaway, and just tag your social media posts with Hashtag Event Icons. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you again soon, right here on Hashtag Event Icons.